And now, a personal favourite of mine, stay right here for another instalment from Documentally.
I'm sat in the canteen at the Open University campus in Milton Keynes. It's all quiet now. Earlier on, it was chaos. I had a delicious lunch. And here they have all the fresh food laid out before you. And I never question the freshness here. I wouldn't know how to question the freshness. If it tastes fine, it's fine, isn't it? And today I was listening to a podcast called Best Enjoyed By. It was another amazing podcast by 99% Invisible, episode 195. And it was educating me around sell-by dates, something that I've always mused over because my grandmother, Italian, married to a Ukrainian, had her own way of judging whether or not food should be eaten or not. Mostly just ignoring anything written on the packaging and just eating it when she was ready to eat it. I remember finding a four-year-old jar of mayonnaise, a nine-year-old broccoli. I don't know how it survived that long. I don't know what kind of situation. She didn't eat that particularly, but she did say that was pushing it. But she got around things really easily, and she used to make yogurt on a radiator in a milk carton and all kinds of crazy stuff. And she lived to be 90 years old. Never seemed to be a problem. So listening to sell-by dates today and how they came about, they were in fact, they're kind of a design error in a way, because they were brought about to show how fresh food was, almost like a selling point. But it's kind of turned into a, this food is now old, you must throw it away, warning system. And there's so many different ways to word it. There's the best before, there's the best eaten by, there's better by this date, there's expired, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of standard. And I'm still confused. I'm going to look at packaging now and not know what's going on inside that. But here I am at the Open University, surrounded by people deep in research. If only there was a scientist handy.
Maybe I could help.
Who are you?
I'm James Bruce. I'm a senior lecturer in chemistry at the Open University.
That's pretty handy. And full disclosure here, I have known James for a little while, and he is here on the promise of a coffee, which we've already drunk, actually, chatting about other things. James, food. Tell me more about your involvement, just in any research that would enlighten me.
Well, I'm interested in making chemical receptors that interact with molecules in the environment. And where it might impinge on what you're talking about with food is a lot of what you smell and taste from food is ultimately a molecule interacting with the receptor on your tongue or in your nose. So that's the bits that you will be able to tell whether food is off or it's bad. Ultimately, when you decide not to eat something, it's because it tastes horrible or it smells horrible.
And this is how it's gauged, isn't it? Quite a lot of the time, there isn't, I mean, as far as I know, after hearing the documentary, people in a room taste yogurt after a day, taste it after 2 days, taste it after 3 days, and when enough of them say, it's getting a bit funky now, that's when they put the sell-by date.
Absolutely. And in some respects, it becomes a very personal thing. So someone might like two-day-old yogurt. I mean, so for example, most people say you should drink white wine chilled. I actually like it at room temperature. I'm probably a heathen for saying that, but that's a taste thing, and it probably does have some kind of deep-seated molecular interaction with the way it's responding with my tongue, and it's quite a personal thing. And I think you're absolutely right. When you look at sell-by dates, they are very much a commercial, increasingly commercial imposition on how we buy food.
So if we could have some kind of label that actually sniffed what was going on inside and then did something to alert us that this is still good, but it might taste a bit different to what you expect.
Absolutely. So if you took one of the molecules that my lab makes, they emit colours, and they change colour when they interact with a target molecule. So if you arranged it so that when this molecule was, say, in the plastic, and say it was a nice warm green colour, and then if a molecule that the food was emitting as it decomposed and went bad interacted with that and then changed it to a nice glaring red colour, you've got a clear indication, don't eat. And it's based on a chemical basis that if you eat it, it will make you sick or it will make you feel uncomfortable.
And this is the key here, from what I am beginning to understand, and that is old food is not going to hurt you. Food affected on a chemical level with pathogens or is starting to rot will. What's likely to happen?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. If a food is contaminated with a pathogen, say it's got some E. coli in it, what makes you ill is the E. coli happily chomping their way through the food, and they're metabolizing, and it's what they, it's the chemicals they excrete that basically make you ill when you get food poisoning. Similarly, if completely, if it's not got the E. coli in it, if it's just decomposing because of age, it's breaking down. Now, there are bacteria involved in that. And again, it's the sort of the chemical waste products of that. It's, you know, if I can be sort of slightly crude here, you're basically eating the bug's poo. So imagine if you sat down and ate your own poo. You wouldn't really want to do that. It's going to make you ill, and that's effectively what you're doing.
Funnily enough, I'm not imagining that for long. There's some pretty funky food out there, though. There's some people, I mean, there's cheeses with crawling with tiny maggots that you buy because it's crawling with maggots. I don't think you can buy it outside of France. They can't export it. There's also meat that hangs for a very long time. Is it about the condition there?
I think it's very much more a marketing thing. It's public perception that some countries will eat things that most of us would think you don't want to eat that. I mean, I personally eat almost anything. If it moves, I'll eat it. I've eaten brains. I think the most bizarre thing I've eaten is a fruit bat in Papua New Guinea. And that was quite an intriguing taste, and it challenged me on a number of levels, but it was my own personal perception. I think the point we really have to be clear about, it didn't make me ill, and actually it sustained me.
So if we were to find a better way of marking food that is not just older, that is now dangerous, would it remove a lot of the massive amounts of food waste we're seeing in Western society?
Absolutely, and I think people are actively working on that sort of thing to try and get chemical means of measuring how good a piece of food is, both in terms of when it's ready to eat. So if you look at bananas, when they ripen, as they ripen, they give off ethene, and the amount of ethene that they're giving off charts the banana's ripening, and so it allows the supplier to work out when the banana is ready to be sold. And so it minimises the waste. So if you deliver lots and lots of green bananas to a shop and people don't buy them all, they then get overripe. The consumer tends not to want to buy a banana that looks really, really ripe, so you throw it away. So there, it's not only about food that's going bad, it's working out when the food is at its optimum to sell, because to be fair to the supermarkets, they're only responding to what the consumer needs.
What's the last thing that made you sick when you ate it?
Gosh, that's difficult. I can't remember the last time I've been ill from eating something, even drinking. I don't think I've ever drunk something that's made me ill.
Are you a person that religiously adheres to the sell-by date?
Absolutely not. Unfortunately, it's one of the sort of, at home, it's one of these great debates as to what it actually means. And I, being a scientist, I look at something, I inspect it, and yes, I will taste something to decide if it's off or not. And there are some things I thought, I don't want to eat that. Sometimes it's obvious. It's like the remains of the Christmas turkey. When the turkey's looking slightly blue, it's probably time to throw it away because it's got mould on it. But otherwise, no, I wouldn't eat that. But no, I can't remember the last time I've been made sick.
To again be crude, but the looseness of one's stool, I don't know if that's a my body saying, whoa, that was a bit full on last night, maybe you shouldn't have eaten that, or it was just a particularly rich night, because over the Christmas period, where I'm eating massive amounts of stuff I'm not normally eating, like huge sugars and ports and cheeses, which I can't tell if they're old or I'm buying a very fashionable blue. So that's not even a gauge, is it?
No, it's in actual fact, you're now touching into what I believe is called your microbiome. Basically, we've got bugs and guts living in our intestine, and often when you eat a meal and you change the environment, you upset them. And if you upset them, that can have an effect on your stool. So often when if you get constipated or diarrhea, it's not necessarily that you've eaten something that's given you an infection. You've just upset your local population of bugs, and so you've got to keep them happy. There's a whole industry in that. If you look at Yakult and all that sort of thing, they're all trying to persuade you that drink these things and it'll keep your gut bugs happy.
So I'm messing with the natural gut bug balance in my body. Have we always had gut bugs? Is this something because of how varied our diet is now?
We've always had some kind of bacterial population living on us. I mean, not only in our stomach, you'll have bugs that will live on your skin. In fact, the best bugs are the ones that don't make you ill. Because then, you know, they're in a perfect, almost not a symbiosis, but they get on with you, and so you're quite happily tolerating them.
I'm a lot happier that I'm almost vindicated by the fact that I go with my gut feeling, should we say, but on a nose level, to be honest. If it honks and it doesn't smell as tasty as normal, I'll probably pass it. Yeah.
Trust your nose and your tongue. I mean, for example, there are fish out in the Pacific and who eat the coral reefs, and they accumulate a toxin from the polyps, and it's called cicatura. And if you eat a big fish, it can give you cicatura poisoning, which is almost like a neurotoxin, I believe. But the way you test whether a fish is safe to eat or not is you take the liver and you dab it on your lips and tongue, and if it tingles, you don't eat it. And that's how the Pacific Islanders test whether they can eat the fish or not, because they're on a subsistence level. They can't decide, oh, I like that fish or not. They have to rely on their own sort of natural analytical tools, their nose and their tongue, to work out whether they can eat tonight or not.
That's fascinating, because that is a system that I learned to use in many years ago. I used to do some survival training and foraging. If you come across a new plant, if it's in abundance and it looks edible, you rub it between your fingers initially and you wait, and then you rub a little bit on your wrist and then you wait, and then you stick a bit under your armpit, which is even more sensitive, and then you move to the lips, then it's under the tongue, and then you swallow a bit and you wait. It can be something like 24 hours before you actually decide, I'm actually feeling all right, I've eaten a bit, and it doesn't seem to affect me, and then you know this entire field of whatever it is edible. Probably got any nutrients in it, but it's edible.
Absolutely, and you're basically conducting a scientific experiment. You're using your body as an analytical lab in a measured way, and it's allowing you to take the risk. And I think part of the whole food packaging thing is sort of tapping into our very risk-averse culture that we've got, particularly in the West, that we want to be told by someone else it's safe, when in actual fact, with a little bit of education, we've actually got the tools in our bodies to make the decisions ourselves.
I like that. I'm also very suspicious that some people are putting dates on their packaging just to ensure there's a fast turnaround of their products and the shop has to get more in.
Well, that is a cunning way of doing it. And it's equally, you look at supermarkets, when something's on its actual day, they'll reduce the price. So if the sell-by date was really that absolute thing that it spontaneously combusted when it reached that date, why are they actually trying to sell it?
So look at the date, by all means, but treat it with a healthy dose of scepticism. Some researchers on the podcast I was listening to found out that a lot of companies just Google how long that food might last and drop a date on the packaging. Find out for yourself. Treat your body like a scientific instrument tool.
I couldn't agree with you more. Be an informed skeptic.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. It's been great chatting to you.
Thank you very much to Dr. James Bruce, Senior Lecturer in Chemistry at the Open University. The podcast that inspired me to record the conversation was episode 195 of 99% Invisible, entitled Best Enjoyed By. You've been listening to a podcast from Documentally.com. You still here? Good. I want to tell you about a newsletter I'm planning. Just an experiment at the moment, but we'll see how it goes. You got a pen? Got a cursor in a browser? Documentally.com/backchannel. Documentally.com/backchannel.